Hello, and welcome to episode 33 of the Surrey Air Global Fantasy Football Podcast. This week, myself, Hybe, and You'll Never Walk Alone, are delighted to be joined by returning guest Quinny and Great Eastbase to discuss their Surrey Air journeys, latest reward structure update, and much more. Welcome.
Yeah, thanks for having us. Good to be back, Hybe.
Yeah, so first ever guest on podcast number one returns for episode 33. I think it's fair to say we've been on quite a journey. We both started at about the same time, but we'll come on to you in a bit, Quinny. Let's welcome Great Eastbase, a newer manager to the platform. So joined back in February of this year. And your tag on Twitter is documenting my journey to financial freedom and using the internet and having fun. So that sounds really exciting. Maybe you could tell us a bit more about that.
Hey, yeah, thanks for having me, guys. Sorare has kind of been the first step in that journey. I've been kind of toying around with the idea for a little while, starting a business, company, YouTube channel, kind of documenting that journey, but I haven't really jumped in yet. And then I heard Gary Vee, who I know is probably a little bit of a controversial person. A lot of people love him. Some people, you know, not their style, but I'm a fan of him. I think he's really motivational. So I've been listening to him for a while, and I heard kind of the last 10 seconds of a video that he did. He mentioned that he invested in a company called Sorare. Went and checked it out and wanted to learn more about it, but there wasn't a whole lot of stuff out there yet. It was, you know, right as the big boom started. So I found John's videos. I found Quinny's videos. Quinny's almost seemed like a different language to me just because I didn't even know, you know,
it's much a different of what language to, was at that to, point. To Mark.
Oh, I told you it wasn't just me, was it? You know, at least there's two of us that speak English on this week's.
Not so much the accent. I just didn't even know, you know, what the game was. So, you know, and I think in the past, that's kind of been my issue. Why I haven't started is I've just researched and researched and researched, but there was just not that much content for this. So I just had to kind of jump in and see what happened. So now, you know, a month and a half later, I'm having a ton of fun and, you know, kind of documenting my journey along the way. So it's been a good time.
So in terms of football games, then prior to Surrey, what else have you, have you played football games in the past or what was it? So Gary Vee, yeah. I mean, I think a lot of us now have started to get on that Gary Vee bandwagon in terms of, yeah, it's just general outlook on NFTs. I think a lot of us have bought into, whether it be in Surrey or through other platforms and games as well. But do you have footballing experience? Are you a DFS guy as well?
No, I dabbled in DFS, but I lost my budget pretty quick there. So that's one of the nice things about this is as long as you buy the right players, you know, you can get some of your money back out at least. I, you know, grew up playing soccer since I was three, all the way up through, you know, into high school and then played around in college, but nothing competitive. And yeah, love the sport, but not in terms of, you know, any kind of serious fantasy playing experience.
Who do you support?
Nashville SC, my hometown team. My wife and I moved here about 3 years ago. Love it. So they came on last year as an expansion squad. So that's my team now.
Oh, perfect. I'll bet, Quinny can just reel off the starting 11 of Nashville, yeah?
Well, I was going to say, how good is Randall Leal?
Is that a rhetorical question? Is that an open question?
Is that a profession? I don't know. I'm off mute, am I?
Yeah, I saw him last week. He got a good score last week, didn't he? On the first, is that first week of the season?
Have you seen his goal, mate? It's potential. It's like Ronaldinho against England. He's out in the far right. It's not a free kick or anything, but it's a live ball, and it's a big cross come shot thing. Goes right in the postage stamp. It's a bit
what dodgy goalkeeper with a ponytail and a moustache.
No, who was it against again? I think the goalkeeper was decent. In fact, who did you play in the first match? Who was it?
It was against FC Cincinnati.
Oh, is it Cincinnati?
FC Cincinnati.
You've broken up a little bit there, Wes. What's your approach?
So primarily sticking with SO5, at least to start. I wish I had the budget to be more in the collectability side, but I hope to build my budget to the point where I can do that. And the Nashville guys didn't stand out necessarily as the best values. Regretting that, you know, not jumping on the Randall Leal before the season started. Now that he's posted that 100, his prices have skyrocketed. But yeah, I... Actually, so my first reward I got this week, and it was a Nashville player, Anibal Godoy. So that was exciting. A special, you know, first reward, and it's a Nashville player. So that was a pretty cool little reward to get.
Oh, very nice.
Post some good scores there. Is he somebody that you know well? You think has he got potential? Is he a better player than his current scores suggest? Or is he currently pushing the boundaries?
Randall Leal?
No. So your new guy, Anibal Godoy.
Oh, yeah. I think he's a very solid player.
Yeah?
Yeah, absolutely.
So who's your favorite Nashville player?
probably Randall Leal and Walker Zimmerman on the defense.
Yeah, he's solid.
And there was a legend in the making.
I was going to say, I feel as though I've just joined a show from a completely different genre here. MLS is really not my bag at all. I mean, I've seen the prices, you know, really skyrocket on players. And I would imagine I saw, you know, a few chats in various channels. First day of the season's gone. You know, a lot of people have spent a lot of time researching. Obviously, you're a great content provider, Quinny. People have, you know, all clubbed in together, shared their knowledge, picked their players, spent their money. Was there a few surprises on the opening day of the MLS this year? I mean, in terms of, I saw Carlos Vela got a crazy substitution when he wasn't ready to come off. And, you know, but in terms of how things have played out first day of the season, how did everything go down?
I don't think there was too many shocks. Like the Carlos Vela thing was, it was barking mad. It was the first, I think it was the first or the second game that Sky had, you know. So I was looking forward to what, they had two matches on Sunday night. Yeah, and that was the first one. Carlos Vela, I got in a trade ages ago. He's been injured the whole time. Then it's been the off-season. And I've got him in a D3, and I'm like, right, brilliant. He's going to absolutely kill it tonight. Stick it on. And like you said, you know, some bad freak substitution, 35th minute. Boom, he's gone. He's out the game. And, it was just brutal. But in terms of results, I think the Seattle result was quite surprising. I don't think anyone thought Seattle were going to win 4-0. Because the thing with Seattle, of course, Lodero being out, and they've not really brought anyone big in. The thing with Seattle is they've got good form for buying in the summer in the European like transfer window, because South American clubs, quite a lot of them wait till that window as well before they'll sell to try and get maybe a European buyer. So Seattle, I would be surprised if they didn't strengthen as the season goes on. So if they're getting this, you know, if they can win 4-0 in the opening game of the season without any new signings and without Lodero, that was probably the, for me anyway, the biggest surprise result. Not that they won necessarily, but 4-0 is pretty good.
What are the prospects for Nashville in general, Wes? What are your expectations for the season to come?
Wes has been going for about 5 minutes, mate.
Has he not? Yeah. So I'm not, I don't look at that.
So screen, he has, so. He's dropped off, yeah. I didn't even notice that. So for the half enough.
I don't think anyone heard me, but I was like, Wes is gone.
it's when you asked him what his favourite colour was, he went, oh, sod that for a game of soldiers, I'm off.
No, we're not having this. He might rejoin. We'll see.
So, Wes, what's your second favourite colour?
I don't know how I'm merging all this in, but yeah. We will look. So we've lost one of our guests.
That's a good job. You're lucky. I've just emptied a bottle of red. I'm a good 6 foot away from another bottle. So
good. I've got a bottle of rum beside me, so it's all good.
I've got one can of iron brew.
Right, so let's carry on the MLS chat then. We'll keep the iron brew bit, and we'll try and get some sponsorship for the next one.
I saw MLS. How did you guys get on? Did you have many teams out? Was there any hopes you had that burst in your face, or any guys come in with the goods?
Well, I still don't play the MLS. It's not, you know, it's not a league that I've really got into. Yeah, I don't even have enough for a full team. So I had a passing interest in seeing how other people had done. I might dip. I'd really like to see some more Argentinian teams. I'd really like to see some more Brazilian teams, some Mexican teams. And then I think I would build out an America's part to my collection. But I've said it before. I'm not a huge fan of the design of the cards, you know, just these heads that are stuck on.
Yeah.
And I know the reason why it's like that. And you know, I was just too late. When the prices started to pick up as we approached the start of the season, I didn't want to go chasing them. And you know, I've spent, you know, more than I'd expected and hoped this year, or because Liverpool have joined the platform. And so again, I didn't want to go chasing, you know, the prices in America. I want to keep ETH back for when, you know, Liverpool cards come up, and I can try and go in for these where possible. So yeah, my priorities have always been more European based. But yeah, I think Brazil, Argentina, Mexico, you know, that they could lure me in. And then, yeah, I'd love to compete with you MLS boys with hopefully Ochoa's got another year left in him, and I'll build a team around him.
What do you think the chances or the odds are that the next season they sign MLS the league, or within the next, let's say, 18 months, they sign MLS the league? Would you think the likelihood of that is, or the possibility of that?
I really don't know, because I don't know, you know, in terms of the license agreements. I mean, I've had the fortune of, you know, I've assisted with the West Ham deal a couple of years ago. And, you know, so that was for me, you know, an eye-opener to seeing how some of these clubs would come to the table and discuss a potential partnership. I would imagine that when you start going from an individual club through to a full league, I really don't know what other potential barriers or points of discussion there would be in order to take everything in one fell swoop. So yeah, club to club, I can imagine, people saying, oh, I want this, I want that. Okay, yeah, we'll give you that. Or no, we won't give you this. But when it comes to a league, your guess is as good as mine in terms of what the criteria would actually be. I think America is quite unique, isn't it? The fact that the Players Association, is there any other leagues around the world which operates in a similar way? I don't know the criteria. What would lead a player to sign up for membership to the MLSPA versus a player that says, no, I'm not going to. I mean, you guys have researched the market. What big names out there were you hoping, I wish there was a card of this player, I wish there was a card of that player that clearly perhaps haven't signed up for, MLSPA membership?
I think that last season one was probably Brian Rodriguez before he went on his loan to Spain and been terrible. But Brian Rodriguez didn't have a card.
Is he the Costa Rican guy, is he?
Brian Rodriguez, no, he's Uruguayan. And there was another one as well, Wanyama. Surprised he didn't have a card last year.
Oh, Victor Wanyama scored that fucking horrible 30-yarder against Liverpool. Yeah, I remember him.
Yeah. Also, I'm biased. That's the only...
Filthy player, filthy.
A broken leg, wouldn't bother me. I love the guy. But yeah, that was a surprise.
You're starting to build up a few ex-Celtic players, aren't you?
The key, Sun Young. I was actually chatting about this today, with my friend. Hybe, you might know this just from videos I've made in the past, whatever. But one of my best pals is really, really he's a big hedge fund guy, COO kind of guy, CFO, COO, that kind of level. And I told him about my key when I bought my key, because it was at the time it was 1.6 Ether. And obviously, I kind of chat to him about, things I'm up to and whatever. And I told him, I was like, I just spent 1.6 ETH on key. And his message back to me was, are you crazy and all this? And I was like, this is going to pan out perfectly. Just you wait and see. This will happen, that will happen, whatever. But he's been injured for 3 matches. So that was been a wee bit annoying. But the key was, seeing that came on, I was so excited to get it. Because again, I've just got such good, fun memories of the 2 or 3 seasons he was there. And then, Hybe, you'll know this being a Hibs fan, and I'm sure you'll know exactly what I'm talking about right now with John McGinn. But see, when you have players that are at your club, done well, and they move on, they can play for anyone. You're always going to back them to a level because they've got a wee bit with you,
That's it. Yeah, McGinn's somebody I would definitely be looking to purchase when they come on, whenever that will be. But yeah, definitely. There's not so, Hibs don't have as many that have moved on and been so successful as Celtic, but yeah, I definitely get that sentiment.
Wait till we get the Israeli Premier League, then you'll bend the money.
That's it.
All the ex-Hib players over there.
But I think what you touched on there, obviously, a bit about enjoyment, and I think that's important. So obviously you've picked up that player with the ability to actually put him in a lineup and he's maybe at the latter stages of his career, but the scores he's putting in are pretty peak, and you're going to try and extract as much value as you possibly can from him. But even if you don't, and this injury continued or whatever happened, I think you'd be quite comfortable with just owning him as that collectibles piece. I think you can almost, it's different for every manager, isn't it? But I think I've certainly picked up a few guys recently that are more, just nice to haves than something that I really, really need to take my collection onto the next level. Not necessarily, they are utility cards and I will get some utility out of them, but there's an element of, I just wanted to have that, first season Vanaken or Bongonda or this new Vandervoort. These were all for me, maybe.
All pining over.
Yeah.
I'm totally with you. You guys could probably speak to this as well, but I've got a few cards in my gallery I could probably ring off the top of my head, when I bought All Black or when I won Wurtz or the Key. So a few guys that once I've got them in my gallery, straight away I'm just telling myself, I'm keeping that guy. Nothing will get me to sell him.
Yeah.
Out of the 130, 140 cards I've got, there's a safe probably 20 to 30 that will never move on. And I'll say that, they will never move on, For one reason or another, whether it be the utility or whether it's
to the Quinny Pump segment of the Sarare episode 33 podcast.
What are you talking about?
I will not sell my cards, but you're more than welcome to send me a little offer by direct message.
Oh, No, not at all. Not at all. There's a few that I couldn't possibly see myself parting with for a variety of reasons, depending on what it is. But All Black, for example, like you guys, again, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about here. The amount of time All Black was like the most obvious purchase to make when you were new, you know, just buy them, you know. Fair enough, I spent like 300 quid on them. And at that time, that was seen as a lot of money. But, you know, when a player like that is within your capability and you know, regardless of who's on the platform, Liverpool or no Liverpool, Real or no Real, that's the goalkeeper I would want in my team, or that's the striker I would want Memphis Depay. It doesn't matter if Barcelona or Man City are in it, I'd still buy Depay because of blah, 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 you know, whatever. And those cards, like, you know, once you get them in, you need to remember the reason you kind of bought them in that sense, because sometimes having them in your gallery is much more valuable to your club than the transfer fee. You see that in real world football as well, I suppose.
Yeah, I agree. And I think listening to some of the guys that we've had on over the last few weeks, the DFS guys, you know, their way of thinking is going to be, right, okay, I need to buy a goalkeeper. And as you said, regardless of who's on the platform, right now, if you looked at the platform, if you don't look at Courtois, Oblak, Alisson, Neuer, I'm sure I've probably missed someone out, you know, the great Pepe Reina, for example.
Nubo.
You know, you got, who?
Had to get that in there.
Who did you say?
Nubo.
Nubo, okay. Yeah, no, we're talking starting goalkeepers at this moment.
Okay.
Not ones that are going to be good in 3 to 4 years from now. So you got those four. You know, at some point you would imagine that the DFS boys are going to go, they're the ones. I've got to own one of these four. Now, Courtois has only been on the platform for, you know, two-thirds, three-quarters of a season. Alisson's only been on the platform for a similar period of time as well. Okay, we've got one and a three-quarter season's worth of Oblaks. But when the dust settles, you know, and we get another spike of new managers, you know, collectively, those four goalkeepers have probably got 500 cards in circulation. And, you know, as you said, if anyone's got any aspiration to compete in, you know, an All-Star or a Champion Europe Division 4, 3, you probably can't get away with any of those rares in Division 2 these days.
Yeah.
You've got, as you said, Quinny, you've got to have one of those cards in your collection, realistically. Otherwise, you're going to rely on a next tier down goalkeeper that will keep, you know, 70% of the clean sheets that one of those guys does.
Yeah, exactly. And the thing is, look, yeah, that's kind of how I feel. So I don't know what the original question was, but there's some guys in my gallery. Oh, it was the key, wasn't it? We're talking about key. But,
the question was, did Randall Leal get 100 points at the weekend?
That's what Wes said. I'm pretty sure.
Wes?
He got a goal.
Who?
And he was electric. He was really good. I watched it. They sent highlights of that match. He is good, Leal. And do you know the funny thing about that is I've been eyeing up his super rare probably since December. And right consistently until about the middle of March is super rare, regardless of the price of ETH. But two people always had one for sale at an ETH or 0.999. And the whole time I was like, nah, it'll come down, because ETH was going up and it never did. These two guys just kept a coin for ages. Now they're up way past that, obviously, but the whole time. And then now it's one of those ones again. You think, oh, I knew it was going to be good. I should have just done it. But when I bought the key, I'll answer the actual question. Sorry, hi B. When I bought Key, he was one of those guys where I was like, I'm buying him and I'm taking this guy to retirement. And that's just the way it is, you know. So whatever happens between now and then happens, but I'm taking this guy to retirement, you know. And he's 32, so that's not much of a declaration, you know.
He's still got a few years left.
Unless he moves to Japan. Yeah.
So, obviously, you've been on now, what, 10 months around that period?
Yeah, so June. So it'll be a year in June.
Nice. So what's the highlight reel? What have been the best moment? So I've seen you've won quite a few very tasty rewards. You've podiumed and came first. What are the big events for you?
Well, in terms of like the gallery and the club and all the rest of it, like definitely getting the podiums and all that, but probably the proudest moment for me was like, do you remember when So Rare Data updated a bunch of the features and whatever, and one of them was like a Hall of Fame feature? And it showed you like the best ever scores in each division. Well, when that first released, I was top. I was Hall of Fame D3 in like under 23s, I think, maybe. And when that came on, I was just proud as punch. I was just like, fucking yeah. I'm not there now. I think I'm like fourth or something last time I checked, maybe third. But that gave me the feels up. That made me happy. You know, like I've got the best ever score in under 23 D3 or global D3, whatever it was. I'm sure it was under 23s. So I'd probably say that. In terms of the platform, like I think when this iteration of the scoring matrix came out, and I know it's still got a few flaws and there's a few things some people would change, but the base concept of the scoring matrix that we have at the moment I think is incredible. And any tweaks they make to it in the future should only enhance it. But that I was really excited when they discovered that. Because there's a really, sorry to give you a tangent, right? But there's a really interesting video on YouTube that's maybe about a year, maybe 18 months old from TIFO. I don't know if you know TIFO football, but they talk about how like fantasy football scoring is like so biased towards like goal contributions and all that kind of thing. So there's like millions of football players like N'Golo Kantes of the world and whatever that are actually rubbish on fantasy football because they never score a goal. So I've always had that in the back of my mind when it comes to scoring mechanisms on any football platform. And then when that development came out, I thought, wow, this is a game breaker. You know, like this gives every player credible, you know, gives them credence to be, you know, to be put in your team. You know, everyone's got an eligibility in that sense.
So if Soraya go on to make their sort of like annual review of the matrix in terms of, you know, the way you've seen it, and obviously you've experienced it from the last big iteration, is there any changes that you would make to tweak it to make it even more rounded and balanced towards you know, both defensive minded and attack minded players?
The most obvious one I've noticed is like and again I'm not the only one to see this, but like fullbacks in particular, but defense, you know, the penalty you get for losing possession, just because of the amount of times it does happen, because so many teams are playing out from the back, you know, and if it's, you know, it's something that I think is slightly over-punished, and it kind of hampers some guys that should be knocking in, not even anything special, but somebody should be knocking in a 45 to 50 if you watch the match, but because they lost possession, in air quotes, so many times, they're bringing home a 35. Because of that, you know, or, you know, maybe exaggerating, but I think you understand the point, you know. So I think.
Yeah, no. Well, I watch it every week with Trent and Robertson. And, you know, Trent normally just about gets more points than he gets possessions lost. I mean, recent weeks it's changed, but yeah. No, I think I'm in agreement with that. What about goalkeepers? I've seen, you know, quite a few people say it's quite a harsh step down from, you know, you can have a guy, keeper doing absolutely nothing, zero saves, one conceded. Versus, you know, one conceded and five saves. What are your thoughts on goalkeepers?
To be honest with you, the goalkeeping scoring hasn't been something I've been kind of deep diving on ever. I've just kind of accept what goalkeepers do or don't do, to be honest with you, because so often like it can be like some of the goalkeepers I've had in the past and some that I still have, you know, if they get beat 4-0, it doesn't matter how many saves they make, you know, you're done. You know? So I just kind of pray for a clean sheet or one goal or one goal difference in the match or whatever. But I don't think.
I mean, Lopez is playing right now for Roma. I'm just looking at SOFA scores. I'm not going by the officials.
Lopez is really good. He gets lots of passes. So having owned his rare previously, I've noticed that he does score really high, even when he does concede a goal or two, because he will make a lot of passes and a lot of successful, accurate long balls. So
Roma are one down at the moment to Atalanta, and he's made six saves from inside the box. He made them in the first 40 minutes of the game, I think. So. Despite them being one down, six saves is definitely going to counterbalance, you know.
On a 57 with that.
Is he on 57 with one conceded? Wow, fair play. Yeah. I say, we talked about Oblak. I mean, as an Oblak owner myself, I mean, the amount of times Oblak gets zero saves and one conceded is frightening. Now, that's not, you know, I don't think that's the element that needs to change with the goalkeeping stats. I just think there needs to be a softer progression curve so that goalkeepers can also, you know, reach 100 points like we celebrate when we get a defender or midfielder or attacker that gets 100 points. I mean, even, you know, a goalie's going to have to play an absolute blinder to get, you know, 80 to 85. So I think anything that can help a goalkeeper have the ability to at least hit 100 each week would be good. And yeah, just maybe a softer punishment from naught conceded to one conceded, because you can have a guy that's having a great game, made a few saves, sitting there on 65, 70 points, concedes in the last minute, even if it is a consolation, and then bosh, straight down to 35 to 40, which I think is, you know, quite a big difference.
Totally. No, I'm with you on that. So I've noticed that again as well. Some of the goalkeepers I've got in Japan and whatever, they don't keep clean sheets, but they might concede one, you know, and it is sore when it is, like, you're watching it, you know, and you see it 70 minutes, like, brilliant, the team's winning 1-0, my guy's on 75 points or 62 or something, and then as you say, boom, consolation goal, means nothing to MD but your team. Points are halved, basically, you know.
Any other variables you think that could be, could help to enhance the overall scoring matrix?
Well, what I was going to say is I think what you said, Mark, about the goalkeepers is pretty spot on. I think because a goalkeeper getting 100 is like so far from likely, you know. It should be very hard, but it should be more plausible than what it is, you know. Like, I think so. That's probably a good point on the goalkeeper. Sorry, I cut you off there, Hybe.
What about things like win bonuses for players? You know, as you said, I mean, we've talked about where players perhaps are a little bit hard done by, the fullbacks and the goalkeepers. You know, the other frustration, well, one of the frustrations that I've seen is that you'll get a defender in a 4-1 loss, you know, quite comfortably get 90 to 100 points because all they've done is get ahead on a load of crosses and, you know, booted it clear multiple times. Do you feel that maybe in the same way that fullbacks are lagging behind centre backs, it's not just a case of boosting fullbacks? Is there a way that perhaps centre backs can have their scores softened? You know, what's the point of having a, you know, if you've lost 4-1, you've lost 4-1. Who on the losing side deserves anywhere near 100 points?
Well, that's true. I've seen a defender I've got, and you guys might have him as well, Milan Van Elwick. He was shooting at 100 and I think a 4-2 loss or something. And he's a fullback by all accounts, you know. So there is some anomalies that come into it. It's a really hard one to pin down, you know. I think pretty much any manager you would come across, Bob, would agree that possession loss is a wee bit too heavily taxed or a bit too frequently captured a stat, because what you've always got to remember with this as well is Opta is not like, it's not like some sort of computer algorithm that studies a football match and spits out stats. Opta have people that sit and watch television and count things, you know. So, and again, you'll never ever know this just because you'll never know the shift pattern on Opta or anything. But, you know, who's to say that this one guy in the Opta office doesn't catch an offside every week or something, you know, or whatever, you know. So there's, you know, so what you've got to remember, the reason I'm saying that is all the stats are kind of like manually inputted, but some of them are up to conjecture as well. Like, what is a big chance missed? You know, I'm sure they'll have an opt off to some sort of guidance on it in terms of like, for the staff or whatever. But, you know, you can ask 10 people down the street what a big chance missed is. You maybe get 8 answers, maybe 6, you know. So it's hard to say, like, so I know one of the things the guys said when they brought out this iteration is, what they've done is they tested it in the office. They watched a match together and they used the score mechanism. And then they wanted to make sure, well, that guy contributed a lot. And you could see that on the pitch and on the score. So I think that kind of thing can be hard to get exactly pinpoint right. Because
you're right. The guys did do that. They also looked at lots of historical matches as well and tried to see what did they look like. Some big matches that had happened in the Champions League and some more domestic matches as well. And then apply that new matrix to those previous scores on the old matrix that we had to see what did that look like. And yeah, looked at a lot more rational than potentially what we had seen before. But as you say, Quinny, there's a lot, some of it does rely on human judgment. And then there's always those anomalies and different styles of play and a matrix being suited for one particular player. You touched upon it, other platforms maybe not rewarding certain defensive midfielders like Kante and others in the right way. And Sarir feels like it's captured that a bit more, but it's never going to be perfect. I think these small tweaks, these small iterations, there's people like yourself and others in the community that really do look at these stats and look at the numbers that are coming back from these players. It's important to feed that back in to the team. So use the Discord channels to feedback where their potential is for improvements to the matrix, where small tweaks can be made. So I think that's just a shout out to the community. If there's something you're noticing, make sure to talk about it, post it in the Discord channels and let the team have a look at that, whether there's an ability to rebalance something or something not sitting quite right. They can have a look at that.
Here's another one for you, which I know is quite popular. We talk about. So when an attacker wins a penalty and the penalty is not converted, versus when a defender concedes a penalty and it doesn't matter whether the penalty is converted, do you feel that that's currently fair?
No, because as far as I understand it, anyway, like from conversations I've been, you know, watching, you know, as they can unfold. But like, if you win the penalty, but the penalty isn't scored, you don't get the full points. Is how I understand it.
Yeah, correct.
You don't get the points at all. That is garbage, you know. If there's points on offer for winning the penalty's been won without question. Whether it be converted or not is another matter. Maybe add on 2 bonus points for it getting scored, or maybe I don't know, maybe just have it definitively penalty.
Well, it's the same for a goalkeeper as well. I mean, the goalkeeper, you know, it's not his fault if the goal, if the ball goes wide. He doesn't get credited with a penalty save if the guy balloons it over the bar. I mean, you can't get your hand to it if it's been ballooned over the bar. And there is a huge, huge difference between goalkeeper making a save and just the attacker missing the penalty, full stop.
Again, that's one of the points that comes into conjecture as well, because even though you're saying, oh, how can you save it if he balloons it over the bar? Maybe the goalkeeper gives him the eyes, the Bruce Grobbelaars, you know?
And the old knobbly knees.
Well, then maybe he should get the points, you know?
Yeah, penalty miss, a penalty miss. I mean, at the end of the day, if he saves it and then they score from the rebound, it's a double whammy anyway, because he concedes the goal and loses his clean sheet bonus. Yeah. So he's also snakes and ladders, up one, down one.
I think at the end of the day, you can really only go with what data is available. So Opta is the provider. What are they capturing? What are they providing? And then build the matrix off that. I'm not so sure they're capturing those distinctions and penalty misses, if I'm honest.
Expect them to.
No, they're not capturing the Bruce eyes or that.
No worries. So then, Quinny, what are you working on at the moment? I mean, you are churning out, you know, significant amount of content. You've obviously got your regulars that come in and you guys discuss team news and, you know, setting teams on a week-to-week basis. You sound like you're loving it. What other stuff you got in the pipeline for people to look forward to?
It's got some really good stuff coming out in the channel over the last like week or two, in my opinion anyway. A good bit of MLS stuff, previews. Well, a lot of content creators came on and helped me make that, which was lovely. I've been doing a lot of kind of just so rare directed, like kind of sneaky hints and tips, you know, about building your strategy, what things to look for when you're selling and buying, just basic things that I try to make like content. If you ever see me put content out like that is like three tips, you know, one of the ones I think I put out in the last 2 weeks is like three tips to buying or whatever. If I put something out like that, please rest assured I've made every effort I can to structure that video in a way that is it can be as evergreen as possible. So it means you can watch it in 3 months and it really should still be relevant and usable, because there's some things like if I do videos and I go, oh, look at, you know, you can do this maybe with some of the older streams or whatever I've done in the past, but do a video and like, oh, this guy's amazing for 50 quid or 0.xy ETH, you know. If you watch that in 3 months, you know, like the chances of it being in date, if you like, is slim to none for any potential outcome you care to imagine. So if you see me doing anything, there's a good chance that it will be.
Did I read it right? You're doing a heads up with John Ellis in terms of picking some players on a particular budget and then going head to head.
Yeah, I actually forgot about that series because we're not doing a video for that this week because we never had games on. But yeah, so me and John got together because like, and again, you guys all know this as well as many other managers, you know, but the community, number one, has grown amazingly in size and scope and all the rest of it. But so has the market and the game, you know. So the problem a lot of people have, this is just humans, this isn't so rare managers or anything, but you get involved in something, you think about any computer game you've ever played, any kind of any activity, any hobby.
Altered Beast.
Yeah, exactly. You get you get the kid to go abseiling and the first thing you want to do is go on the biggest rock. You've not even learned how to tie a knot yet. It's what most people are like, you know, they want to get up and going. They want to, I live quite close to like a ski slope and stuff like that. And I know guys that like would just buy a snowboard, for example, when we were younger and like just go on a skiing holiday and just learn it on the job, if you like. And a lot of people are like that. When you come into an environment or when you ever do anything that's motivated by aspirations, you want to realise your aspirations yesterday. You know, it's just human beings. It's the way we all are. So kind of fortunately and unfortunately, so much of the stuff that's been on over the growth periods we've had for the last like 10 months since I've been here is very well documented and on show. So a lot of people have a wide variety of aspirations that they could have. And a lot of them are not achievable in 48 hours, you know, or two game weeks or something like that, you know. So that there can be a wee bit of, you know, human beings, we can quite often like underestimate what's actually achieved over 3 months, but we can overestimate what we think we can do over like 3 weeks or whatever, if that makes sense.
Yeah, definitely. Completely agree with that. So we touched that a bit on iterations to the scoring matrix. And something we've recently seen, some of the communication that's came out from the team, is the new reward structure. So over the last couple of weeks, there's been a bit of communication on that. Latest that announcement we had from Nicholas, I'll just sort of give a bit of a brief overview of that. So there was a lot of positive feedback from that, but there was definitely a bit of nervousness and anxiety and within the community that we were going to be losing the ETH rewards, the threshold payments. Nicholas wanted to just put out a bit of a note there just to alleviate some of those concerns, to really talk about how those ETH thresholds will be getting replaced. But that's the thing, they are getting replaced. We're not going to lose them in their entirety. I think people were a bit shocked that the initial communication that went out, there was a suggestion in the community that, well, we've no longer got this ETH threshold payout. What does that do to the value of lower tier cards? And there's definitely a bit of panic around that. So the current thresholds, known as Beat the Game, they're going to stay until late summer in the current format. They'll then make a modification in the coming weeks. So we should see that maybe in the next 2 or 3 weeks, I'm hoping, where we'll change from being ETH-focused payouts to fiat-focused payouts. So the $15 and the $30 are going to be the payouts there that will be in place until the end of summer. After that, so the team are currently still working on this. We don't know exactly what this will look like, but there will be a change to those threshold payouts, but there will still be a structure in place that is rewarding managers in terms of, it will no longer be an ETH payout, but it will be potentially a fiat payout. There'll be more cards within the structure there. So yeah, there's still a few unknowns, and I think that's clear from the original communication and the follow-up there from Nicholas, but it's clear that the team are doing what they can to enhance this product. We're not going to see a regression. I don't think they've got a view of onboarding all these new managers and new users into the platform to then snatch away what brought these managers into the game. So I think if anything, we will see the reward structure, the overall payout levels on the platform actually increase over time. But it's going to take a bit of time for the team to work out exactly what that looks like and marry that up with the future platform growth. So I think we see lots of smaller iterations rather than, I think that there needs to be that element to allow the platform to grow into itself. So when we move from 500 to 5,000 managers, from 5,000 to 15,000 managers, that you need to scale that in a certain way.
The thing with the changes, right? I hate starting a sentence off with this, right? But I did a video, right? Like 6 months, 7 months ago when the reward structure, you know, the ETH threshold thing came out. And it's for, like, I don't know about you guys, right? But see me, like, I try for the ETH threshold every week. If I hit it, cool. If I don't, it's not really, you know, it doesn't really form much of my agenda or much of my, you know, focus on a game week. Because it's not for a gallery like mine, or it's not really for a player like me. It's for new managers, you know. So, like, if you've, you know, so I think the problem some people had is they joined with the aspirations of not, you know, really kicking on at any stage, you know, in terms of, like, I'll try and maybe win some good cards and kick on. Just wanted to have it as a small little game and just churn out some ETH and whatever, which is cool and fine. So the reason I'm kind of prefacing this for that is I really am not too bothered about the ETH thresholds. They're not for me. I don't mean that they're not for me, is that I don't like them, but they're not. The company hasn't put it in place to keep me happy. They've put it in place to get new managers up and running quickly, you know, put a wee bit of money back in their wallet each week, help them keep engaged with the game, help them acquire new cards, help them move up the leaderboards and the ladder and all that kind of thing. So I'm very confident that whatever changes or developments they'd make to it, and they've said as much in that statement you read, Hybe, that there will be monetary community, you know, rewards that will remain in some guys. So whatever decision they make with it in mind of what that is, the purpose of what that payout is for, as long as that stays at the heart of it, I don't think they're going to go too far wrong.
Yeah, I'd share that sentiment. So I think for a lot of managers, that threshold payment was a reason they maybe joined the game, or it was a way of coming into the game and building up. So there's definitely that element. But I think whatever this is replaced by will give managers that and more, that ability, the progression element. That's something the team talk about quite a lot, is the ability to progress through the division. So definitely think we see that more. But I'm similar to yourself. I'm entering not to grind that ETH reward, but to actually try and win more cards so that I don't need to buy these cards, build up my collection. And that's where I get the most enjoyment from, entering my teams on a game week and having that that chance of actually winning some of these prizes. That's one of the most exciting parts for me.
Yeah, I think from my perspective, I mean, look, as long as they keep that beat the game and then beat the player elements, I mean, I think that was the big, when the new regions came in and the thresholds came in for the first time, I think the attraction, you know, to me and for anyone at any level is the fact that you can come in and you can beat the game. And at the moment, those thresholds are, you get 205 points in All-Star Division 4 and you win some ETH. You get 250 points in All-Star Division 4 and you win twice that amount. And okay, yeah, I mean, we've seen some crazy movement in ETH over the last four or five months, and we could have quite easily have seen it go the other way, in which case $15 and $30 would be, you know, maybe considered to be, oh, very, very generous these days. But it's not that far off. And as long as they have a structure in place, this is my opinion, that allows somebody new to join the game and say, okay, well, there's all these people with various different size collections and strengths of collections, but it doesn't bother me because there's a way that I can play the game each week and I can progress by playing the game. Exactly. The only thing that's changed is that it's moved because our minds are now conditioned to go, well, ETH is now 1800 to one. Oh, wow. You know, 12, 15 months ago, it was 100 to one. So the only thing that's changed now is that because the database and the user base of managers predominantly thinks in fiat-based currency, and I know there's a lot of people that have voiced their concern on Discord because they are you know, more thinking in ETH, or they conveniently now prefer to think in ETH because of the way it's moved over the last 6 months. But the bottom line is $30 a week for, and it's not 50 weeks of the year, you know, good time you've factored in the midweeks. Even if we have 30 midweeks out of a year, that's 80 times a year, it's $2,400, whichever way you look at it. And as we've seen with prices this week and over the last couple of weeks, the trend is on, we've got a downtrend in player prices at the moment. You know, by and large, $30 still buys you $30 worth of player. It used to be that 0.1 ETH, you'd have to still pay 0.1 ETH for a player, even if ETH was 2-3 times the price. But that's not the case these days. And you can see that when you negotiate with people, you know, you can see from the prices that people play on the primary and the secondary market, there is more and more managers now focusing on what is that ETH worth in my local currency? Okay, I'm prepared to pay. You know, I've had conversations. I would never have a conversation 2 years ago where someone said, you know, I'm looking to sell a card. You know, what do you want for him? Well, what are you prepared to pay from him? £200. Whereas now, that's the sort of direct message that I get with someone. What are you prepared to pay for him? I'm expecting to see 0.05, 0.08, whatever the going price happens to be. But I'm getting quoted, I'm happy to pay you €150. I'm happy to pay you $300. Which is, you know, which is what we've all got to adapt to. And yeah, of course, I think we'd all love nothing more than to make sure we never sell a card for under the ETH amount that we paid for it. But in reality, it's not going to happen. You're going to be sitting there with, you're going to be carrying cards on your collection if you honestly think, you know, as long as ETH continues on its upward trajectory, if you honestly think you're only going to sell cards again for greater value in ETH than what you spent on it, you're going to be left with a stagnating portfolio, in my opinion. You've got to adapt, and the prizes are adapting. And I say, for me, as long as that ability to play the game and beat the game exists, then I think we can attract new users, and it's a nice way to get people started. And whether that happens to be 0.01, $15, bundle load more XP, points towards a new card, don't think it really matters, as long as that people can clearly see that progress will lead to, you know, ultimately getting a return on your investment.
I think so. Yeah, that's what's most important, isn't it? It's accessibility and then enjoyment of the game, being able to actually compete, get involved, and then that view of progression. And I think the team are well aware that that's what's necessary, how we get there. I think there's still some questions, and that's something that I think Nicholas has said, he's got an AMA coming up. There'll be some details on that next week. So start to have a think about your questions, get them in. I think normally it's the top 10, 15 most upvoted questions that will get answered first, and then it will go into a more question and answer session within the Discord channel there. So have a think if there's anything really important to you that you want to ask there, and get those questions submitted when that comes up.
I think as well, like a big part of the confusion around the reward structure and all that as well was the fact that quite well quoted now at this stage, like Nick did a tweet a few days prior quoting the sales figures for March or whatever. And a lot of people have then conflated that with that announcement and taken it out to be some sort of, you know, a lot of people were expecting like these thresholds, didn't, you know, we don't obviously know what will happen next, but people did take it as like something was being removed. That was a lot of people's first kind of reading of the announcement, if you like, and then reference that against Nick's tweet. But, you know, I've never met the guy. I know you have, Mark. You know, Nick seems like an intelligent guy. Would you verify that?
Oh, 100%. And I think just picking up on some of the other things I've read on Discord and socials and what have you, is that some people read into that as a brag. And I'd like to strongly refute that. Knowing Nicholas and the team, you know, I think they're very level-headed and very humble in everything they say and do. And, you know, when you look at the crypto space, you look at the gaming space, you know, so many companies lead with, we've sold X amount. Oh, we've got this, we've got that. And they're leading with, you know, headline numbers where they're setting themselves up for a fall, because realistically, you know, you go and do a truckload of sales, it's very difficult to then build on that in the following month. And I think companies like Axie do it very, very well. They manage expectations. You know, they've got some fantastic figures. They've got an amazingly engaged community like we have, and their figures speak for themselves. They don't need to turn around and bludgeon it to everyone and say, we've sold X amount, we've sold X amount. When I see Topshot, and don't get me wrong, I love Topshot, you see a lot of their tweets are always money focused. We've sold this, we've sold this for X, we've sold this for Y. And I think Sarare, to their credit, have been able to balance that very, you know, very fairly over the last couple of years. Yes, you know, of course, when a Ronaldo sells for a record amount, or, sorry, Hive, it's going to be me that breaks the seal this week, and Mbappe sells for X amount, of course you want to celebrate that. And why wouldn't you want to put that all over social media and attract attention and so forth? But I think if you look back over the 2 years at the way in which they run their socials and the way in which they can speak and communicate with managers, then they certainly don't brag. And some people might have thought, he's telling us they've made 30 million in the month of March, and now they're doing this and they're taking this away. I can tell you now that is, if you feel like that, then I feel sorry, because you must have had something happen to you in the past that makes you always try to look for the worst or something negative in the situation, you know, because Nicholas isn't someone that's going to go out and start singing, we've made all this money. That's not him at all. I mean, I think the bottom line is they've raised $50 million, which is an enormous amount of money for a startup business of their size. You know, it's going to be interesting where the scrutiny now should be put on Sarare and the team is how they spend it. And, you know, they haven't gone out and thrown it away at the moment on certain things. And I'm sure we'll all be pleasantly surprised in 6 months, 12 months. As you say, Quinny, you've been now on your Sarare journey for 10 to 12 months, or 12 months coming up in June. You know, you've seen ups and downs, but it's a pretty smooth upward journey from day one. You might have disagreed with some of the way they've delivered things, or you think, what have they done that slightly differently? But by and large, in 12 months, you've made a massive stride from when you started in June in 2020. And yeah, okay, there's going to be people that are in the community that perhaps haven't got their head fully into Sarare yet, that have joined in February and they joined in that, you know, hype phase. But, you know, whenever, you know, I think Nicholas posted again that the average price of cards, rares, super rares, into the forum. And it's not, you know, the market isn't coming down. People are still paying in dollars, euros and pounds more, you know, for cards than they were 2 months ago, than they were 6 months ago. You know, they've cleverly managed the supply of cards onto the market. And just because people are like, there's cards every 60 seconds, or there's cards every 75 seconds. It's too much. It's only too much if you've already bought your collection. You've still got to think of the people that have been biding their time and waiting to buy, and, you know, those that are coming in. The new auctions that occur coming around every minute of the day, they're not for people like us that have been in the game for 3 months, 6 months and longer. They're for people that are new to the game. So, you know, if you're worried that your listings on the secondary market aren't attractive enough now, then you've probably bought too many cards. because you shouldn't be competing with the cards on the primary market in the first place. Therefore, the new users are coming on board. But I do get it. You know, people have every right to be, you know, upset. They can interpret the communication in whichever way they want. But as you've just asked there, Quinny, I don't think Nicholas and the team, and certainly they've never displayed to me the fact that they're making so much money and then they're thrusting that down everyone's throats. Yeah, we're making this, we're making that. It's not like that at all. I think, you know, they had every right to celebrate the fact they had an absolutely mega month of March. You know, April was never going to follow that. We're getting closer to the end of a European season. And, you know, we'll need to wait now for some more news and whether that's, you know, more clubs, more leagues, you know, something which we perhaps, you know, can't even think about ourselves at the moment. And that will again attract more people to the game and to play the game. February was exceptional. And, you know, I think we should look back upon it as a massive milestone. But, you know, it's not something which I think we should think, oh, they've made all this money now, that, you know, are they going to run away with our money? Or, you know, it's a reason to distrust them. These guys are genuine guys. And, you know, it's easy for me to say because I've backed them for longer than anybody else. But, you know, you guys now have both got a year under your belts. And I'd like to think, you know,
share that sentiment. Absolutely. Yeah,
there's nothing that you've seen or heard that's deterred you away from wanting to always try to better your collection, improve your collection.
Yeah, totally. And like the kind of question I asked you that set you off, Mark. So like, I don't think like Nick is like a stupid man or anything like that. So anyone in their right mind who puts a tweet out saying I made 50 million last month isn't then going to come out to his customers and go, oh, the payouts are going down. You know, like, it's just madness that anyone would think that's a reasonable man's, you know, best way forward or his planned. You know, I'm going to tell everyone how much money I've made and then I'm going to tell them that we're not paying out as much anymore. Like, that's just,
but it's not as much as they've taken on 50 million, there's this, you know, massive responsibilities with that 50 million as well. It's not like, here's 50 million, go and do whatever you want. Do whatever you want with it.
Sorry, I think that tweet goes out and it's more of a kind of tone setter. Like, we're doing well, things are getting bigger and better. Stick with us, you know. That's the way I kind of take a sentiment like that, whereas a lot of people took it as like you say, it's a brag or it's rubbing it in face, you know, or whatever. And it's like, these people, you know, no one in their right mind would do that. You're growing a company. Why would you rub it in people's faces? Or why?
Look what they've done with nothing. Look what they've then done with 4 million that they got in 2020, and it's $4 million, you know, and now consider what they could do and what they should do. You know, if in 12 months they squander 50 million, you know, we'll all be having a different conversation. but based on what they've done with nothing from a standing start, based on what they did with a 4 million injection over the last 12 months, you'd like to think that with 50, they'll continue to at least scale it at a similar pace. And, you know, we'll look back in 12 months and go, great, wasn't that amazing? Wasn't that, now that 50 million, now I can see, you know, why they were so excited to showcase it. And it might, you know, maybe it's us. I just don't think there was any element of it that was a brag. It's a fact. And, you know, they'll be judged on what they do with it, not by just because they've gone and broadcasted the fact they've got it.
Can I ask you a question, Hybe? So we see all the new reward structure, right? Obviously, they broke it down and they showed us like all the regions and everything, like how many more cards will be won and all the rest of it. But they didn't show us where the divisional breakdown of those extra awards. Where do you think? Well, would Division 4 will probably get some love. I think that goes without saying. But where outside the D4, where do you, both you guys, of course, think the increase in payout is going to be most attractive or most appealing?
I think it needs to be in Division 2 and Division 4, doesn't it? So Division 3, I think, is quite appealing as it is, already has a lot of people targeting that, and we see some nice payouts there. Division 4 needs to be that the entry level and have the majority of those rewards, doesn't it? So to enable those at the lower end of the scale and those with larger collections to build up and to win more regularly. But Division 2, that's that. It feels to me it's almost that point. A lot of people will never be able to afford uniques at the price they are. But super rares can be won from your Division 4 entries, can be picked up in trades and deals over time. I'm sure we'll see you know, some availability on other third-party sites as rewards as well in the future. So I think Division 2 is an aspirational division, and it's achievable for the vast majority of users over time. It's not saying you'll get there day one, but if you start to build up your Division 4 collection, you can feasibly aim to reach Division 2 over, say, the course of a year or two, if things pan out correctly. So for me, I think those two are the sort of where the focus should be on enhancement of rewards.
Yeah, I think the focus should be on still, I still think everything is underpinned by the perceived value of the Tier 2 and Tier 3 cards. And whilst Tier 2 and Tier 3 cards are not perceived as positively as they could be, I don't think it really matters whether we add more cards, you know, more cards, how deep the cards, you get payouts go in Division 4, etc. You know, there's got to be, for me, changes that give added utility to Tier 2 and Tier 3 cards. Because then at that point, people will aspire to want to win Tier 2 and Tier 3 cards.
Yeah, keep them, because those guys can become Tier 1 and star rewards in the future. So, you know, football is quite fluid, form changes and things change over time. So somebody this year who is a Tier 3 reward and a bit of a scrap player to most managers, not got the greatest utility, in 2-3 years' time, completely different story. And I think, yeah, the ability to actually want to build up and keep those guys is important, isn't it? And we're going to see more special weeklies. But do you think that's enough, or is there more that needs to be done to really give value to
for me, the word special means, you know, something above average. And so to have special and under 40 is an oxymoron.
So maybe you take that away and so give them a separate.
So for me, special has to be, who are the best licensed team? What are the best, what are the most sexy fixtures involving licensed teams this week?
Yeah, okay. Give nice rewards out.
Yeah, but vary it up so that every team from every region has a chance. And, you know, we don't just suddenly have every single Real Madrid game or every single Juventus game. You know, there needs to be fair representation of all the licensed teams. Everyone's got special fixtures. They should be celebrated. If they are wanting to give added utility to players that are coming back from injury, substitutes, players that don't, you know, have those cards that get under 40 points on average per week, then, you know, one of the ideas I've seen put forward is an academy league. Now, an academy league could replace training. It could sit above training if training was to stay. And again, you could have academy league divisions 1 to 4. Exactly the same rules as we have in it, all the regions at the moment. So you'd have global all-star, global academy, global under 23. But then maybe, as other managers have hinted, rather than those with large collections being able to field a team in all-star 1 to 4, under 23 1 to 4, and global academy 1 to 4, maybe you get a restriction. You say, okay, well, you can only enter a division in all-star higher than the highest team you've entered in the global academy, for example. So if I put in a global academy division 4 team and a division 3 team, I'm only able to put in an all-star division 2 team and a division 1 team. Give managers a selection dilemma, because otherwise people are just going to keep buying cards, and then any single tournament opens, they're going to just like, I'll enter everything I possibly can. But with an academy league, where you could say, okay, well, I'm building players up now, not quite ready to go into the All-Star League. I don't think my players are going to be able to compete in the All-Star League against, you know, those sort of players that are getting 60, 70 on a regular basis. So I'm going to start going from I'm going to progress from being a rookie, and I'm going to go from rookie to an academy. And I know that in the academy, if I'm in academy division 4, I'm only going to be competing against other managers in a similar position to me, because as soon as somebody goes into All-Star division 4, they're ineligible for the academy division 4. So I think it's a softer progression curve. You could divide out the prizes, so you don't have to suddenly reward 500,000, 2,000 people in All-Star division 4. You could divide the prizes more equally between the academy and the All-Star. And managers have got a choice. What do you want to go for? Now, you may only win more tier 3, more tier 2 cards in the academy, but you're guaranteed to have less competition. as I say, you can decide whether you go from Academy Division 4 to Division 3 or whether you go from Academy Division 4 maybe into All-Star Division 4. There'll be a little bit more options in terms of how you want to progress and grow your collection.
Yeah, I'm in two minds there. So some of the stuff you said there's definitely got, like, I can see it working and having value for the platform. I'm typically against restrictions for managers. So the, you know, restricting where you can play. I think longer term, you want managers to be able to enter as much as they possibly can. But I do see the value in having maybe an academy that's sat below that excludes, you know, you from, yeah, excludes you if you are already competing at a much higher level. So it gives an entry into that higher level. So it might be a place where managers can come in and they start to pick up the tier three and tier two cards, enter into there with the view of moving into the existing global structure. And it's not almost a tier five, but it sits, as you said, I think an academy below that and above the training, potentially.
I think as well, like, they can make good use of, like, the manager's page. So there's only 10 of them at the moment. They've got those, like, 10 achievements to unlock, for whatever that means. It doesn't really mean much at the moment, but they could have it that once you've unlocked, like, six of them, then these academy things are locked off to you, and that's it. It's kind of like an extended rookie league, if you like, but it's not dictated on, you know, card ownership or whatever. Maybe you could have, like, two commons.
Yeah, so I like that. Once you hit a certain point, so, like, for us, for example, we would not have any eligibility to enter this new rookie league, but new managers coming in. So you'll have people who progress in the game at different stages. So somebody has the ability to come in and throw in £50,000 and quite quickly build a collection that allows them to compete at a higher level. So I think it's difficult because I don't think it's right to put a monetary value restriction or a timestamp restriction there necessarily. So in terms of hitting some kind of threshold, whatever that may be, so building a Division 4 team, I don't know. There's definitely something in that, Quinny.
All the wee achievements thing on my page now, right? Most of them are pretty rudimentary. You know, customize your profile picture, win an auction, buy a car.
Yeah, so I don't think those existing ones are relevant. But
so how would you feel then? Because the focus is so much on tournaments, winning tournaments, placing in tournaments in order to progress. Now, the best card you can win at the moment is a Super Rare Mbappe at the moment, arguing in terms of value, or you can win very high level Super Rare cards. How would you feel if Super Rare cards were possible to win through unlocking achievements? Nothing to do with fantasy football, only to do with collector-based criteria that Sorare throw at you. Would you feel it's fair that somebody could build out a collection of nice star cards, tier one cards, through collecting achievements, even if they decided that, you know, if they were rubbish at SO5 or didn't even want to play SO5?
I think that could be quite, see, on that kind of same vein, it's not really directly what you said there, Mark, but I had a wee kind of train, a wee kind of wave come to me the other day thinking about this type of stuff. And, like, maybe, like, you know how the thing that we all can quite easily draw a comparison with and think, can they do something like that? Is, like, the FIFA Ultimate Team squad battles. Obviously, when you do that, if you don't know anyone at home, but you discard, you lose the cards at the end of it, which also nobody wants, and it's kind of hard to do that with an NFT. But what if, rather than it being something like that, they put on a challenge, for example, like, over the month of April, if you put three or more Atletico Madrid players in the one lineup, twice or more, or something like that, then you unlock X achievement, or, you know, whatever it might be. And then those little things, I think people, like, when it comes to games, you're spot on. Like, there's definitely things that I get enjoyment from games that isn't just completing the level or beating the boss or whatever.
Yeah. I think that's something we will see. So the potential to give other types of NFT rewards that aren't necessarily Sorare cards. So that could be some kind of, as you said, in that Atletico Madrid example, some kind of Atletico Madrid NFT that you'll... Yeah. Within your account, a badge. And, you know, I think you've talked about it before in other videos, Quinny, around the potential of gaming and NFTs. I think I'm seeing it in other games as well, where you get certain rewards as NFTs. And that's something we're seeing in yeah, lots of different sites at the moment, whether that's something that everyone has values or not, but it's something a bit different, a way of rewarding, and badges seem to be, as I said, not for everyone, but some people seem to like that stuff.
No, I think, don't get me wrong, I like, you know, badges, whatever it happens to be, they'll be great, and people will buy into that, and people will enjoy showcasing, you know, cards, lineups, you know, anything they've got that is slightly different, or they want to, you know, put on the front of their gallery page. Fantastic. But until people have got the ability to win more than a font upgrade, or, you know, banner extension or something like this, the focus will always be on SO5. So the question is, if this is going to become a collectible platform with a gaming element, how big does that collectible aspect have to come? Now, that might deter some people. People might go, well, I'm only here for the gaming aspect, you know. But if that's not sustainable, or, you know, it needs to be, you know,
collectible gaming arena.
Yeah, if it's going to reach out to these, you know, the millions of fans that, you know, the North Star of the company goal is, then at some point the collector thing has to take off, and the incentives to be a collector have to be there. Otherwise, it won't matter. We'll just all gravitate and continue to build for SO5 and SO5 and, you know, the side games that we now know and love from Sierra Data, Sierra Mega, Ubisoft and the like.
Where does the incentive come from traditional collecting?
It's just shown off, isn't it? Like, really?
So a similar thing here, but we've just moved it online. Yeah. So before, you would show, you know, you'd have your mates round and you'd show them that baseball card, and, you know, now it's that people...
You have baseball cards in Leaf?
No. No, definitely not. Definitely. They all got sold.
Yeah, but I think the collecting side could lead to things like we see on, you know, the challenges that you get on FIFA.
Yeah, exactly.
Certain cards you cannot, you know, which are some of the, in my opinion, some of the nicest cards. And, you know, when I've seen a weekly challenge out there,
these pinky ones,
yeah, that has allowed you to try and, you know, finish top three, top six, top one to achieve a, you know, a card which cannot be bought at auction, then that hopefully, there's got to be users out there that share similar feelings that are like, I'm motivated to try and win that. You know, yeah. People are putting uniques, people are putting super rares in their weekly challenge lineups where, you know, multipliers don't mean a thing, but I'll sacrifice a unique or I'll sacrifice a super rare to play in a weekly challenge because, wow, I can win a card, I can win a man of the match card that cannot be bought at auction.
I've done it quite a few times recently. I've put an extra focus in the special weekly, and that's something I didn't do until they enhanced it and started to give out these rewards, these additional cards. And some of them, you know, you don't know necessarily who you're going to get because a lot of the time it's a man of the match or a player.
You're going to get someone that you can't get. I mean, Quinny, when you do your videos, for example, and you go through your team building selection and you're choosing your sides for the week, you know, there must be weeks where weekly challenge is almost like an afterthought. Nah, I won't be. I'll do my D4, do my D3s, and then I'll work around that. Whereas I imagine every time there's a, you know, the Real Madrid ones, you know, okay, Real Madrid, I can got a chance to win a man of the match Real Madrid card. You know, I would imagine then at that point, people are going, all right, I'll do my weekly challenge first. Then I'll look at my Division 4. Then I'll look at my Division 3, for example. And when the collector side of things is like, if you are the first person to collect this week's lineup in the Bayern Munich game and you will receive, you know, a special Bayern Munich card, you're going to go hell for leather to try and get every single Bayern Munich starting player so that you've got a chance to unlock a card that isn't possible to achieve or win elsewhere.
Does that change the focus? So, and does that make people a bit more of a pumpy element to it? So something that you touched on before about the NBA Top Shop style of doing things. Does that change the dynamic there at all?
Yeah, I think it does. I think it adds another decision-making process to the manager. Do you only go to the market to buy players that can increase your chances of winning SO5, or do you diversify and pick up, you know, players that are more rounded, you know, a few from each team, so that when an announcement comes from the team, right, we're doing a Circle of Bruges challenge, or we're doing a Gimnasia La Plata challenge, or we're doing this, and there's a chance to win this, people go, right, well, I've already got four. Right, I only need to get a couple more now. You know, if everyone starts from zero and it's like, oh, you've got to get 10 players to unlock this particular thing, most people would just turn around and go, nah, no, it's not for me, unless it's the team you support, or it's a big team where you think there's a, you know, the prize at the end of it is worth the value.
That's probably a reason why I carry so many players. So I have a fairly large collection of rare players. Part of that is taking a risk that in the future, we're going to have all 20 leagues involved. We're going to have SO5 specific tournaments in all of those 20 leagues, potentially, maybe SO7, maybe SO11, or we'll have these on third party sites. So having the ability to actually compete with a Dutch team, with a Belgian team, with a Portuguese team, I think is interesting for the future, but also for these weeklies. So this week, when it's a Russian special, I actually looked at that first. So I decided Maximenko, I'm going to focus that goalkeeper there in my Russian lineup, and I know I've got enough to put out the other four. And do all the other managers have that are currently on the platform? So that's currently a bet that I'm making, that having a good spread of players across different nations gives me opportunity to maybe get involved in more weeklies, but also still get my challenger, my champion, my global division 4 and 3s out.
I just think it adds more liquidity or potential liquidity to the platform as well, because everyone's like, oh, it's giving people a reason. You'll have people that want to collect because they want to unlock something. And then you'll have people wanting to sell to those collectors because they're like, well, I'd rather have my premium from selling a card to someone that ultimately ends up wanting to collect. And so there'll be, you know, yeah, there will be some more passing around of cards. And it'll have to obviously monitor to make sure that, you know, cards can't suddenly unlock prizes for multiple managers at the same time. But I think if it's going to be difficult. It's already difficult to convince someone to buy tier 3 and tier 2 cards to compete in SO5. But would it be difficult to convince someone to buy tier 3 and tier 2 cards for collector challenges that could still unlock a tier 1? Or if you were the best collector on a particular week, a tier 0? And people might go down that route, and then it might just bring up the average price of these tier 2, tier 3s. And, you know, you wouldn't suddenly get everyone coming in going, oh, if I don't get a Kimmich, if I don't get this player, if I don't get that player, oh, well, what's the point? It's like, well, come in and guess what? You buy 5, you know, Antwerp players this week, you can unlock a star Antwerp player, or you can unlock something which does have value to someone else, which will help you, you know, progress in the game. And you can sell that star Antwerp player that someone else likes to an Antwerp fan, and that in turn can go and buy you a tier 1 card of your choice off the market.
I think the special weekly, the kind of thing about it, the collector side and all that's lovely, right? And I thought at first you were maybe bringing this up to stitch me up, because I was second and third on special weekly this week until the 11th hour. I finished fourth, which was a right kick in the balls, because I was set to get one of these special cards, and then right at the last minute, not happening. But the potential downside on special weekly is the biggest of all the divisions, because if you're a fledgling manager, you've got a limited gallery, limited resources. The chances of you coming top 10 in a competition of 1,000 is, you know, the percentages are there to be seen. It's quite easy maths. I'm not going to try and do it and embarrass myself. but if you were to go into D4 with that, you've got a better possibility of pulling a tier 3 out or whatever. So I think for most people, the special weekly is, if you have the ability to field a team, like I did last week, it was an MLS one, and I had enough players to do that with ease, then great. But with it being only top 10, get anything out of it, I think it's really hard to enter the market for special weekly. I think that's maybe where, in the old system, before the XP penalty, you would definitely get maybe trading with friends, you know, loan me a card for the game week and whatever. Before the XP bonus, there's no friends anymore when it comes to loaning cards, because no one wants to have the XP bonus.
Yeah, I'd like to see that that tweaked back again at some stage. You know, so, I think we talked about an automated system, didn't we? But
yeah, but so this special weekly and the collector stuff's really good. But as I say, the downside on special weekly is too high for the up-and-coming manager, I think, because even for me, I would never describe myself as up-and-coming at this point, but I'm not that interested in, I'm never going to buy a card for special weekly. I was very close to it maybe about a month ago, and I just thought, why? I'm going to buy this one card for special weekly, and I'm probably then going to, you know, it was probably one of those game weeks where maybe Holland wasn't playing, or there was just one league missing that screwed a challenger lineup. The challenger lineup could have went into, I can't remember the details of it, but I thought, no, I'm not going to bother. And many managers will think that as well, especially if they need to buy 2 cards or 3 cards to get into special weekly. Unless, like you were saying, Mark, it is like you know, they are a Real Madrid fan. And it's like, and again, this is part of the problem, especially weekly, is to win the Real Madrid man the match card, you need to have at least, you know, the stipulations have been typically you need at least one player from Real or whoever they're playing, potentially depending on the team. And some guys just don't have any of those guys, you know, unfortunately. So I think maybe like bundled ones in that situation, if they have that kind of same theme going up, maybe they take the restriction off the thing, because some guys just will never be able to afford a bundle. And simply, bundle players in the secondary market have a floor above all other rares because they can only otherwise be acquired via bundle or be an
issue. No, that's true. And yeah, I think it's going to be a gradual process. I think, you know, that, you know, we can all probably think of rules that could help to lower us into that collector mentality. I mean, again, you know, the thing I like about, you know, the Serie Mega, and you get the dice and you've got to try and get closest player towards that particular final score. You know, there's no reason why, you know, just because you've got the biggest score, okay, you win, you're on top of the podium. But, you know, there are other ways in which we can say, right, choose 10 players from the same club and closest to 400 points wins. You know, that doesn't eliminate anyone from playing that game, because you can throw in a couple of subs, you can throw in a couple of DMPs, you can get a couple of people scoring 80. You know, you've got to just find 10 players to score a particular amount. And that might mean that some people then have to go hunting to buy that 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th player. But it won't matter whether it's so much a DMP or whatever. And as long as there's lots of random challenges like that, that would encourage people to participate. Yeah, okay, yeah, the ones at the moment, which are the most desirable, arguably related to bundles, as you said, which makes it a little bit more challenging. But I also think that a weekly challenge, by definition, should be challenging. You know, it shouldn't be something which everybody can just say, hey, that's nice and easy, it's another free ride for me, I'll put my team in there. You know, whenever you get, you know, and I haven't played FIFA for a number of years now, but whenever I did and there was a card that I wanted to actually win, I wasn't expecting to look at the criteria and go, oh, piece of cake, I'll do that in 5 minutes, thanks very much. It was a sacrifice. I had to decide, is that a card that I'm willing to, you know, spend time and, you know, resources on to try and unlock? And if I was, great, I'd go and do it. And if not, I'd think of people that, you know, okay, well, these cards could be useful to those people, and I'll sell those into the market to get some more coins and, you know, build up for when there was a player that I wanted to get involved in. So I think a challenge should be that. I don't think each of the weekly specials is something which everyone's got the right to suddenly just enter a team and off you go. I think there should be some which has got strict and difficult criteria to enter. And then there should be ones which are, you know, free for all and anyone can enter. Right. Well, if the Serie team aren't listening, I think we've pretty much covered off a number of ideas they can take and see where they go with.
So, guys, a lot of food for thought there. One for the Serie team to listen to and, yeah, get the notepads out and the whiteboards out and work on through this. So before we go, just want to mention, so we lost one of our guests, Wes, very early on. He had a bit of a personal emergency there, so hoping the dog in there is fine. We'll surely get him back on in the future. Very interesting guest. So we'll get Wes back on in a future episode.
There is one other announcement we've got to make as well, Hybe.
God, we do indeed.
Yes. You want to run that by?
We do indeed, yes. So before we close off, what we wanted to do is just celebrate something that came out of the community a few weeks ago now. So a previous guest we had on the show, Jod, one of the big collectors in the platform from Canada. So after being on the pod, he talked a lot about his Alphonso Davies card there, a real collectible card that was the shirt number. And he ended up deciding that he would raffle that off for charity. He managed to get a $10,000 bid on that, and Serier themselves matched the bid. So $20,000 is going to go to a great charity. So it's called Inspire. It's an Indigenous education for youth charity. So they more precisely focus on post-secondary education grants. So these young guys can become firefighters, therapists, business owners, all sorts of things. So it's really putting skills back into the Indigenous community. Great gesture from Jod there. $20,000 raised from an Alphonso Davies rare collectible card there on the back of Jod's great gesture, and Serrer as well, doubling down on that. So, yeah, that's fantastic, isn't it?
Big time. Great to hear that they've managed to match it as well. Because J-Hod was saying to me they were struggling to make sure they could work it out because it's like cross borders and crypto and all the rest of it.
I was wondering where the money was going to come from. I mean, they only made 30 million in March, and I know they've been bragging about that left, right, and centre. I was surprised they were able to find that 10K. Fair play to them.
That's it. No, but really good gesture from both there. Jod, well done. Congratulations on that. That's a lovely thing to do. So thank you. So that brings us to the end of today's Surreal Global Fantasy Football podcast. Hope you found it useful. And as always, if you could like, subscribe and leave a review, then we can help introduce the fantastic concept to more users. See you next time.